Well, here's a blockbuster, the first blockbuster of the NFL new league year. The Arizona Cardinals are trading David Johnson and draft picks to Houston for DeAndre Hopkins and other draft picks.
Nothing is normal in sports right now, except the annual flurry of trades and signings that precedes the NFL season. All-pro receiver DeAndre Hopkins is headed to Arizona, and Stephon Diggs is bound for Buffalo. Superstar pass rusher DeForest Buckner is going to Indianapolis, and backup quarterback Case Keenum landed in Cleveland. Okay, one of those things is not like the other. Amidst the trade mania, Bill Barnwell tells us who won and who lost, and who could be next in line for a big deal. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Tuesday, March 17th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by ADT. Well, Bill, you're working from home. I am working from home. But we are both being put to shame by these NFL teams because this has been one of the more active legal tampering periods in recent memory.
It has, Mina. I feel like some NFL executives are working from home better than some other NFL executives based on what we saw today.
Well, that's a perfect segue to the most shocking news of the day. Early on Monday morning, there were reports that DeAndre Hopkins, three-time All-Pro wide receiver, who is on an affordable long-term deal, was available for a trade. I was asked about this on the radio, and I said, that's ridiculous, because three-time All-Pros on affordable long-term deals do not get traded. Well, Bill, it was not ridiculous, because later that morning, news broke that Houston GM Bill O'Brien, also known as Houston head coach Bill O'Brien, had traded DeAndre and a fourth-round draft pick to the Arizona Cardinals for running back David Johnson, a second-rounder, and a future fourth. Bill, I am extremely confused by this, perhaps more confused than I've ever been, and I watched Westworld last night.
I did not watch Westworld last night, and I'm also incredibly confused as to what Bill O'Brien is thinking here. Let's start with the David Johnson end of this deal. David Johnson's contract is already underwater. He's guaranteed $13 million or so over the next 2 years for a guy who's been a replacement level running back outside of 1 year at the NFL level. Honestly, David Johnson's contract isn't really worth trading for to begin with. And the Cardinals basically got the Texans to swap fourth round picks to give them David Johnson. Then you get to the DeAndre Hopkins side of the thing. Even if you assume that DeAndre Hopkins wanted a new contract, even if you assume that there was some sort of cantankerous relationship between him and Bill O'Brien, we know from the Odell Beckham trade last year that the market for a wide receiver in the prime of his career is more than a first-round pick. And the Texans somehow conspired to get a second-round pick for DeAndre Hopkins, who, by the way, is a better player than Odell Beckham. So I can't fathom this was the best offer for one of the league's best players. I'm not surprised Bill O'Brien screwed something up, but I would figure just keeping DeAndre Hopkins on your roster should be pretty easy. And Bill O'Brien couldn't even do that.
The Texans fans in my life were very unhappy, Bill. Meanwhile, on the other side of this trade, you've got Kyler Murray tweeting, "It's 50 outside and we riding with the top down. What a beautiful day." He's happy, I imagine. Arizona Cardinals coach Cliff Kingsbury, who we know loves using wide receivers, is very happy. How big of a win is this for a resurgent Cardinals offense?
Oh, I mean, just getting rid of David Johnson was a victory, let alone adding one of the five best wide receivers. If you want to nitpick this deal, I guess you could say the Cardinals have invested a lot at wide receiver with handing Larry Fitzgerald a one-year contract. You have 2 second rounders already in the lineup at receiver in Christian Kirk and Andy Isabella. Now you're trading for DeAndre Hopkins. They could have used a second round pick on defense, but I mean, this is the rare trade where I haven't found a single person on the internet who's argued it was a good trade for the Texans. That's pretty hard to pull off. And yet that's where we are. So I think it's an absolute no-brainer for the Cardinals. It's just a move every team in the league should be open to making.
I think the Hopkins trade looks even worse, if that's even possible, when you consider the fact that later in the day, the Vikings parted ways with their own very good young wide receiver, Stephon Diggs, sending him to Buffalo and receiving a first rounder, as well as a fourth, fifth, and sixth. Vikings also threw in a seventh. I don't think it's very controversial to say Stephon Diggs is very good, but DeAndre Hopkins is better. What do you make of this deal? for the Vikings and for the Bills?
First off, I make of it that Bill O'Brien probably spent most of his evening creating burner accounts, just trying to goad the Vikings into trading Stephon Diggs and then deleted them all once the trade terms actually came out. I mean, it's a really fascinating trade for the Buffalo Bills, right? This is a team that for the last 3 years, we've heard all about how strong their culture is, how important it is for Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean to build a sort of culture in Buffalo that they saw in Carolina. And it's worked, right? Two playoff appearances in 3 years for the Bills. So many of their moves seem to work out. Now, if you think back to this time last year, the Bills had just finished missing out on trading for Antonio Brown. And obviously, that was the landmine of the 2019 offseason. Now we're here in the 2020 offseason, and not only had they already acquired Josh Norman, but they're trading for a guy who was live tweeting his desire to get traded by the Vikings during Monday afternoon. I mean, Stephon Diggs is obviously a super talented player, and on field, it's a great fit for a team that now gets to push John Brown into a number two role, Cole Beasley into a number three role. Everyone in that receiving core looks better after adding Stephon Diggs. But can the Bills culture overcome adding a player who, while talented, it's fair to say has had his share of run-ins over the past couple of years with Mike Zimmer?
Well, in less spicy wide receiver news, although more lucrative news, late last night, Dallas signed a 5-year, $100 million deal with Amari Cooper. Not surprising that they wanted him, but were you surprised that it wasn't larger given that he was a true free agent after the Cowboys tagged Dak Prescott and, you know, could have tested the market?
A little. You know, I certainly felt like Amari Cooper could have chosen to reset the wide receiver market if he wanted to. And this deal doesn't quite get there. It's just below Julio Jones in terms of average annual value. It's still a great deal. I mean, 5 years and $100 million is absolutely fantastic money for Amari Cooper. But we've seen reports from Adam Schefter that Washington offered him seemingly a lot more money. You assume that would have been that sort of record contract for a wide receiver, maybe something approaching $23, even $25 million a year based on what Julio Jones got from the Falcons. But it does make sense. I mean, the Cowboys are a team that was significantly more competitive than Washington. Amari Cooper obviously is an incredibly gifted receiver. And despite what the Cowboys might think, yes, wide receivers do want to play with Dak Prescott as opposed to someone like Dwayne Haskins. So I'm not surprised. I think it was a logical move for both sides to reunite for a long-term deal. And I think Cooper left some money on the table by going back to the Cowboys.
On the other side of the ball, the San Francisco 49ers traded their Pro Bowl defensive lineman DeForest Buckner, a former first-round pick, to the Indianapolis Colts for the 13th overall pick. Then Adam Schefter reported the Colts immediately signed Buckner to a multi-year deal at $21 million a year, and the Niners announced a 5-year deal with edge defender Eric Armstead at about $17 million a year. Let's start with the Niners. On one hand, they're pretty squeezed cap-wise, and they have a deep defensive line. On the other hand, I think Buckner has been better than Armstead. So what do you make of this deal for them?
It's a really interesting idea for the Niners. And it goes back, I think, to trading for Dee Ford last year. I mean, they can only devote so much in terms of resources to their defensive line. They already have Dee Ford on a big contract. They're going to sign Arik Armstead to a big contract. They have already used the second overall pick on Nick Bosa. All those moves are great. I don't think anyone has any fault with making those decisions, but their options were letting Arik Armstead leave, eventually signing DeForest Buckner to an extension, and coming away with a third or fourth round compensatory pick. That's pretty good. DeForest Buckner's good. The compensatory pick is good. On the other hand, by making this trade, they can keep Armstead, move him to defensive tackle. They get rid of Buckner, but instead of that third or fourth round pick, they get the 13th overall pick in the draft. That's a huge, huge asset for a team that is already missing their second and third round picks. Now they can trade down. They can acquire additional picks. They can possibly draft someone who can replace Buckner or someone who can replace Emmanuel Sanders, who is a free agent. It gives them a lot of flexibility, which, as good as Buckner was, he was going to take up a massive portion of their salary cap on an extension.
So I think DeForest Buckner is an amazing talent. I love this deal for Indianapolis, who comes into this offseason, Bill, with a ton of cap space. And in him, get a sure thing, a known quantity, to bolster their pass rush. As we've discussed, they gave up their 13th overall pick, which leads me to believe they're not in the market for a rookie quarterback. Do you think this means they're going all in on Phillip Rivers?
I think so. I mean, that's been the hot rumor now for a couple weeks. Typically, there's smoke to that fire. I mean, they have wanted to upgrade on Jacoby Brissett all offseason. It could be Tom Brady. I mean, I guess that's not out of the question at this point, but I do think Rivers makes the most sense with Frank Reich being there, his former coordinator in San Diego, now the head coach in Indianapolis. And they have the cap space. They can afford Buckner. They can afford a big deal for Rivers. They can do pretty much whatever they want when it comes to signing players. So I think it does seem to point towards Rivers signing there in the next couple days.
All right, after the break, let's talk about some of the quarterbacks who are still out there and the other big fish in free agency. We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe you just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. Bill, the first quarterback domino to fall actually came down on Sunday when news broke that the Titans had signed Ryan Tannehill to a four-year, $118 million deal coming off of the best season of his career. Quite a come-up, by the way, for a passer who had been traded for basically nothing. Meanwhile, the team also franchise-tagged their star running back, Derrick Henry. What did you make of those deals in conjunction?
I mean, the simple answer, I think, is that it tells me they were a lot closer to an extension with Tannehill than they were with Henry, who has talked about getting Ezekiel Elliott caliber money. The franchise tag is really not close to that on a one-year deal, let alone a multi-year pact. With Tannehill, what I find so interesting about this deal is that I think he's the first player who has really benefited from the new CBA. Of course, the new CBA being agreed to prevented teams from using both the franchise tag and the transition tag. So that forced the Titans to sign one of these two guys before free agency began so they could franchise the other. Now, because they were closer to a deal with Tannehill, they had to go over the top to make this deal happen. Ryan Tannehill is getting more new money on this deal that is practically guaranteed than any other quarterback in football at $91 million. Russell Wilson was the previous leader at $90 million. So, I mean, this is an enormous investment for a guy, like you said. Miami had to pay $5 million of his $7 million salary just to get a fourth-round pick in a trade from Tennessee last year.
Do you think if the CBA had not been approved and Tennessee had had both tags available to them, they might have just tagged Tannehill instead of giving him all this money?
Yeah, I think so. I think they would have been able to franchise Tannehill, transition tag Derrick Henry, and then negotiate an extension with Tannehill that would have guaranteed him 2 years. That extra year, which is $29 million in 2022 when Ryan Tannehill is 34 years old, is guaranteed. And I don't think it would have been guaranteed if the players had turned down that CBA. So I don't know if Ryan Tannehill voted yes, but he should have because it worked out really well for the former Dolphins quarterback.
So one of the busiest teams thus far has been the Cleveland Browns, who not only put together a four-year deal with former Falcons tight end Austin Hooper with $23 million guaranteed, but also went out and signed a three-year deal with Titans right tackle and former first-round pick Jack Conklin, which came in at $30 million guaranteed, and on top of that, added Case Keenum as a backup quarterback. Bill, other than the Browns sending a signal that they'll do whatever it takes to protect Baker Mayfield and back him up, what did you make of these deals?
There's something really interesting happening with the contracts we've seen on the first day of the negotiation period. Now, for a DeForest Buckner, he's going to get a huge contract no matter what. So he's comfortable signing a 5-year deal. But a lot of the contracts we've seen have been 2-year deals, 3-year deals, at the most 4-year deals. That's not common for free agency. Why we're seeing that is because there are agents, there are players who are looking towards the future and looking towards the new TV deals the NFL is going to sign 2 or 3 years from now, thinking, hey, if we wait a couple of years, the salary cap is going to spike. And we saw this in the NBA, where players who signed their deals right, even marginal players, ended up getting massive contracts that they would not have gotten even a year earlier. If you're a Jack Conklin, you probably could have got a 5-year deal if you were so inclined. But I think he's probably happier taking that 3-year contract and getting to free agency one more time, at which point he can get a stratospheric deal versus the contract he signed with the Browns this time around.
So one of the biggest signings on defense involved cornerback Byron Jones, who left Dallas for the Dolphins and signed a 5-year deal. Now with Jones off the market, the next big defensive target is probably Jadeveon Clowney. Bill, Jadeveon Clowney is widely seen as one of the most talented pass rushers in football, but he's also kind of hard to evaluate because he doesn't have the sacks to reflect that perception. What do you think the market is going to look like for him?
Oh, I mean, he's going to get paid. The frequency with which possible superstar pass rushers in their mid-20s hits the free agent market is just so rare that you're going to see a team take a shot on adding Jadeveon Clowney, and they're going to treat him like he's a guy who's worth Khalil Mack level money, even though he doesn't have Khalil Mack style numbers. Now, from Clowney's perspective, he turned down a deal to the Dolphins last year, and he said, I want to play for a winner more than once. But if your options are the Seahawks offering perhaps $20 million a year, and let's just pick a team, say the New York Giants, who have a desperate need for a pass rusher and have a ton of money to burn, and they're offering $25 million a year, just to throw a number out there, is Clowney going to turn down what might be $25 million over the course of his deal to go play for a winner? I don't know. I think he's going to have that option, though, because there's going to be a lot of teams who maybe don't have a path to Chase Young, but might sit here and say, we can add another player at a key position with our pick and then add a Chase Young level impactful pass rusher with Clowney.
Bill, counterpoint, Clowney should sign with the Seahawks for less because it would make me happy. Just throwing that out there. So as for the other quarterbacks, now that Tannehill's staying in Tennessee and his former backup, whom he used to back up, Marcus Mariota, is headed to the Raiders to back up and perhaps compete with Derek Carr, where does that leave Teddy Bridgewater? It was reported that there could be some interest in Chicago, which is so perfect because Teddy Bear, but we don't know if that's going to happen. Do you think there's any chance after this quarterback musical chairs is over that Teddy might be left without a starting job?
It's not out of the question. I mean, this is a guy who 2 years ago, nobody seemed to really want, even last year. Only the Dolphins were interested in giving Teddy Bridgewater a chance for a starting job. He's someone who has been counted out everywhere he's gone. A guy who was dropped in the draft by a lot of teams because he had a bad pro day. A guy whose size and arm strength plays against him. But we know Teddy Bridgewater wins football games. So I am inclined to think there's a team out there who will give Teddy Bridgewater a chance, but we might not see that until we actually see the dominoes from Tom Brady signing somewhere.
Thanks so much, Bill.
Mina, it's been a lot of fun hopping on ESPN Daily over the past few months, but unfortunately, Bill O'Brien just acquired me for Deshaun Watson, so hope he's a good podcast guest over the next few months.
I'll take that trade.
That hurts. Thank you.
Coming up, there's still some sports happening very far north. Hi guys, given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com
to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply.
Here's another story I want you to know. While the NFL news has not stopped, sports, as in actual games, matches, fights, have largely trickled to a standstill because of the coronavirus pandemic, with a few exceptions. One event that's still going on is the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race. The mushers leading the competition are now halfway through the 975-mile race, and public health officials told the Washington Post that while they're working with organizers to assure the safety of everyone involved, they weren't terribly concerned about the racers because, one, they'd left before any coronavirus cases had been confirmed in Alaska, and two, they're alone. Now, that doesn't mean the Iditarod is not without some hazards right now. People have been told not to gather at the finish in Nome. Post-race celebrations have been called off. And several checkpoints that are normally held along settlements on the trail have been moved outside of those villages. But for the most part, sled dog racing is a solitary sport. And aside from the pups, who the World Health Organization told us cannot catch the virus, the mushers are generally by themselves as they race through rural Alaska. As the state's public health director put it to the Post, they do a very good job of social distancing. And soon, we'll see who did it the best. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.